When you lock the front door of your house at night, there's a certain comfort in hearing that heavy deadbolt slide into
Oh, for
place.
sure.
Yeah.
It's solid brass, it's tested.
Right. You implicitly trust the mechanics of that lock. But imagine waking up to find your house has been completely emptied out and the front door is still perfectly locked.
No broken glass, no kicked in frame.
Exactly. You check your security footage and you realize the lock itself didn't break. The lock just decided to open because the burglar was wearing the exact same uniform as the factory worker who, manufactured the deadbolt 3 years ago.
Which is a terrifying thought.
It really is. And that invisible erosion of trust is exactly what we are seeing across three massive threat reports today. Welcome to a special Cyber Mornings Daily Style deep dive.
Glad to be here.
So, whether you're managing an IT team, coding your own apps, or just, trying to keep your personal data safe, you need to know how the ground rules of digital trust are being rewritten right now.
And what's fascinating here is that today's attacks, they aren't about kicking down the front door anymore. They are about exploiting the invisible supply chains, the internal assumptions, and, the architectural blind spots of the software you already trust.
Yeah, and speaking of trusted software, let's jump right into our first story, which involves a company millions of people rely on every single day. I'm talking about OpenAI.
Right, this was a massive development. OpenAI had to force emergency macOS updates across a huge chunk of their product line.
We're talking the ChatGPT desktop application, the Codex app, the Codex command line interface, and Atlas, right?
Yep, all of them. And they were hit by this supply chain attack known as Mini Shai-Hulud.
Which sounds like something out of Dune, honestly. But the crazy part is, it didn't even target OpenAI directly. It hit two employee devices through a totally separate platform called TanStack.
Exactly. And for anyone listening who uses those OpenAI macOS apps, there's a massive practical impact you need to be aware of right now. You absolutely have to update those applications before June 12, 2026.
Yeah, that is a hard cutoff date. If you wait until June 13th, the built-in macOS protections are going to completely block those apps from launching.
And we should probably clarify the scope of the actual breach here just to, separate the reality from the alarming headlines.
Good call. What exactly was stolen?
Well, according to OpenAI's internal disclosure, no user data was compromised. Production systems were untouched, and their core IP remained secure.
Okay, so a sigh of relief there.
Right. But the attackers did manage to access a very specific, limited subset of internal source code repositories. And the problem is, they successfully exfiltrated credential material.
Ah, so they stole the keys.
Exactly. Specifically, the signing certificates used to validate their iOS, macOS, and Windows products. Once a signing certificate is compromised, the software basically loses its official ID card.
Which explains the forced updates. OpenAI had no choice but to pull the plug and revoke those certificates immediately, right?
Yeah, which triggers that June 12 kill switch in Apple's ecosystem.
Hmm.
And the wild thing is, this isn't even an isolated incident for them.
No, not at all. They had to rotate certificates just last month, back in mid-April 2026.
Right, when that North Korean group, UNC 2069, compromised an Axios library through a GitHub Actions workflow.
It's just relentless, but I really want to unpack the mechanics of this TanStack attack because TanStack released a statement clarifying that no maintainer was phished.
No passwords leaked.
Right. No one had a token stolen from their account in a traditional sense. TanStack said their own continuous integration pipeline, their own automated builder, stole its own published token via an implicitly trusted cache.
Yeah, that's the part that really turns heads.
I mean, how does a system actively betray itself without any human error? It's like a bank guard accidentally handing the vault keys to a robber just because the robber was wearing a uniform in the employee break room. How does that even happen?
Well, it comes back to that implicit trust we were talking about at the start.
Yeah.
You have to look at why developers use CI pipelines in the first place.
To save time testing and compiling code,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. Doing that from scratch every single time takes forever. So developers use caches, which is just temporary storage for files that don't change often.
So they don't have to re-download them every single build.
Spot on. And the attackers, a group operating under the name Team PCP, recognized that every single tool in that pipeline blindly trusted whatever was inside the cache.
Let me see if I have this right. It's like a bouncer at a club who checks your ID thoroughly the first time you walk in and then gives you a hand stamp.
Okay, I like this analogy.
And for the rest of the night, if you step out for air, he doesn't check your ID again. He just looks at the stamp. The attackers didn't bother trying to steal a fake ID.
They just figured out how to sneak into the coat room and make the club's own machine stamp their hand.
Wow. That is exactly it.
It's brilliant in a highly malicious way.
Yeah.
TPCP engineered a path where they poisoned that temporary storage. The pipeline's own automated processes booted up, trusted the cache completely, and essentially scooped up the secure publish token the exact microsecond it was generated in memory.
That is just nuts. The scale of this operation is what really stands out to me in the Hunt.io analysis. They aren't just quietly stealing data.
Oh no, they're turning this into a spectator sport.
Yeah, they're running a contest on cybercrime forums. They're offering $1,000 in Monero cryptocurrency to anyone who can successfully compromise open source packages using this Shai-Hulud worm.
Which they've just made freely available, by the way.
Right. And they also successfully hit Mistral AI. They compromised hundreds of packages, pivoted onto a lone developer device, and are extorting Mistral for a $25,000 buy it now fee over 5 gigabytes of source code.
We are seeing a highly organized, almost corporate approach to cybercrime here. They're effectively franchising their exploit.
But let's talk about the technical sophistication, because Hunt.io found some wild stuff about their infrastructure. Their primary command and control server is hard-coded to a specific IP address, right?
Yeah, 83.142.209.194. And normally, if defenders find that IP, they just block it at the firewall.
The malware loses contact with the attacker, and the botnet goes dark.
Under normal circumstances, yes. But Team PCP built a fallback mechanism called Firescale. If that primary IP goes down, the malware actively begins crawling public GitHub commit messages all over the world.
Wait, it just reads random code updates from everyday developers?
Yep. It looks for a specific string of text hidden in those millions of commits. And when it finds a potential alternative server URL, it doesn't just blindly connect to it. It verifies it against an embedded 4096-bit RSA key.
Okay, let's unpack that, because a 4096-bit RSA key, that sounds like military-grade cryptography just to check a backup website. How does that lock the defenders out?
Well, an RSA key uses asymmetric cryptography. There's a public key and a private key. The malware holds the public key and Team PCP holds the private key.
Okay, so the malware uses its public key to mathematically unlock the hidden text on GitHub.
Exactly. If it unlocks, the malware knows with absolute certainty that the URL was written by Team PCP. It prevents cybersecurity researchers from just uploading their own fake GitHub commits to hijack the botnet.
That is terrifying. They are hiding their backup instructions in plain sight on the largest public code repository on Earth.
And it gets more destructive. The Hunt.io report highlights that on compromised machines geolocated to Israel or Iran, there is a 1 in 6 chance the malware executes a secondary payload.
Yeah, it maxes out the computer's audio volume and systematically deletes every accessible file on the hard drive.
It mirrors their previous kamikaze wiper malware, called Canister Worm. Plus, they're actively harvesting AWS credentials across 19 zones, specifically hunting for access into restricted U.S. GovCloud sectors.
Okay, so Team PCP proved you can weaponize a external supply chain. But what happens when the software on your machine trusts itself a little too much? Let's look at today's second story.
This is such a great pivot because Vladimir Chokarev's recent discovery proves you can weaponize internal logic against itself.
Right. He unearthed a chain of severe vulnerabilities in a platform called OpenClaw, which security firm Sierra has collectively dubbed the Claw Chain.
And we are looking at a masterclass in exploiting internal trust within a sandboxed environment called OpenShell.
Now, a sandbox is supposed to be a tightly controlled environment, right? Where untrusted code can run safely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Tokarev found the architecture of this sandbox is fundamentally flawed at the logic level. Attackers don't break the walls of the sandbox. They trick the system into opening the doors for them.
And it starts with how the system handles Haradoc bodies. Walk me through the mechanics of how a shell expansion token hidden inside a Haradoc actually lets an attacker execute unapproved commands.
So a Haradoc is basically a way to feed a large block of text into a program without formatting every single line. It's supposed to be treated as pure, harmless text.
Okay, makes sense.
But the OpenShell parser wasn't isolating that text properly. If an attacker includes specific characters like a dollar sign followed by parentheses, the system's parser gets confused.
It stops treating it as harmless text.
Exactly. It interprets it as a shell expansion token, temporarily shifts into execution mode, and runs whatever command follows the dollar sign.
Because it assumes the text is safe since it's already inside the sandbox. But the part of this exploit chain that's really wild is the Takatoyu vulnerability, time of check to time of use.
Yeah, those are fascinating. Think of a Takatoyu vulnerability as a millisecond-level bait and switch.
A bait and switch, how so?
Whenever a program wants to read a file, it first asks the OS for permission. The system checks the rules. That's the time of check. Once granted, it executes the action, the time of use.
Right, so in OpenShell, it checks if a file operation is safely inside the sandbox, says yes, but then there's a microsecond delay.
And in that microsecond, the attacker uses a race condition to swap the safe file path with a link pointing outside the sandbox, like to the system's core credential directory.
It's like showing a security guard your ID at a checkpoint, waiting for them to hand it back, and in the split second before you walk through the turnstile, you swap places with an unauthorized person.
That is a perfect analogy. The system blindly executes the action because it already did the security check.
Unbelievable. And the final stage of this exploit is just as counterintuitive. To gain full control, the attacker leverages a client-controlled flag called SenderEyesOwner.
Yeah, the system just implicitly trusts this flag without actually verifying the authenticated session.
Which sounds like me walking past a bouncer into a VIP club just by wearing a sticky name tag that says I am the owner. Why do highly complex systems have these simple blind spots?
It seems like an egregious oversight, but you have to look at the immense pressure developers are under to optimize performance in microservices architectures.
Because validating cryptographic tokens takes time and processing power.
Exactly. So to make internal communication lightning fast, developers sometimes rely on client-side assertions. They assume, well, the message says it's the owner, and it's coming from inside our perimeter, so I'll believe it.
And the attacker just chains all this together. They trick the parser, use the microsecond bait and switch to reach outside the sandbox, and then slap a sticky name tag on their data packets to get admin control.
And plant a persistent backdoor. And as Sarah emphasized, traditional security controls are completely blind to this. Every single step looks like legitimate internal agent behavior.
So for you listeners managing OpenClaw deployments, the practical impact is you must update to version 2026.4.22 immediately.
Yes. Do not wait on this.
In this new version, they finally ripped out that spoofable sticky name tag system. They now issue separate bearer tokens to verify actual ownership.
Which is the architecture that should have been implemented from day one.
Definitely. So we've seen attackers exploit external supply chains and internal sandbox trust. Here's where it gets really interesting. What happens when attackers apply this exact same sophisticated software engineering to their own malicious infrastructure?
Ah, yes. The third story. This is a massive revelation from the Microsoft Threat Intelligence team regarding Turla.
Right. The Russian state-sponsored group affiliated with FSB Center 16, they took their Kazuar backdoor, a tool they've used since 2017, and totally rebuilt it into a modular peer-to-peer botnet.
Kazuar used to be monolithic, just one massive block of code trying to do everything. But Microsoft found they broke it down into three specialized microservices.
The kernel, which coordinates, the bridge, which proxies to the command server, and the worker, which gathers the data.
Exactly. And this mirrors how legitimate enterprise cloud software is built today. But the way these modules coordinate with each other is a paradigm shift.
This is the part that blows my mind. The kernel modules literally hold an election over something called mail slot to pick a leader. It's like a microscopic malicious democracy happening inside a compromised computer.
It really is. They use mail slot, which is a legacy inter-process communication mechanism built into Windows.
Like the pneumatic tube system at a bank drive-thru, right?
Yes. It lets isolated programs drop messages into a shared tube to communicate without generating external network traffic.
So they use the tubes to vote. How do they pick a winner?
They compare uptime divided by the number of system interrupts, like reboots. A module running for 3 weeks that survived 5 reboots is inherently more stable than one spun up 10 minutes ago.
That makes total sense. And the module with the highest stability score wins the election, talks to the bridge, and tells everyone else to go into silent mode.
Ensuring only one single process ever generates network noise, it makes it exceptionally difficult for defenders to spot.
And they decouple the data exfiltration, too. They use fully qualified PABs in a dedicated working directory to stage the stolen data.
Operating exactly like an espionage dead drop, the worker acts as the field agent, encrypting files and dropping them into a hidden folder.
And then later, the kernel leader acts as the smuggler, picking it up and sending it out. If a security team kills the kernel, the worker remains entirely hidden and unaffected.
Which means security teams must monitor internal inter-process communications, like named pipes and mail slots, not just external network traffic.
Wow. If we connect this to the bigger picture, all three of today's briefing stories highlight a huge maturation in the threat landscape. Attackers are treating malware campaigns like enterprise software deployments.
They're using CI pipelines, exploiting architectural logic flaws, and engineering P2P resilience.
So what does this all mean for you? It means the concept of a safe perimeter is officially dead. Whether it's an open source library, a local sandbox, or the internal logic of a program, trust must be continuously verified.
Cryptographically verified at every single microtransaction.
Exactly. I want to leave you all with a final lingering question. We saw how Cazuar autonomously organizes its stealth with a mathematical election, and how Firescale autonomously hunts GitHub for its backup instructions.
Both highly decentralized behaviors.
Right. So if malware is becoming this self-organizing, what happens when these autonomous botnets stop just following hard-coded instructions and start using local AI models to dynamically negotiate their own tactics on your machine without ever checking in with the attacker at all?
That is a very sobering thought for the road ahead.
It really is. Thank you for joining us for today's Cyber Mornings Daily Deep Dive. Stay vigilant out there.